Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of CookieCast. Today on CookieCast, it's the football podcast, or at least it looks like the football podcast. There's just, like, something missing, or maybe someone missing. Yes, when four become three, you got to pick up the reins, you got to take that slack, and you've got to charge on with a football podcast as if nothing was wrong, nothing was going on, nothing was happening. Before we start, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave reviews where you can leave a review. And share the podcast around is the big one. Share the podcast around. Right, let's get started. Here we go. This is CookieCast, the football podcast.
Recording in progress.
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. Must be because I'm in my new location from a podcast perspective. Definitely not new, definitely just not seen for a number of weeks. Welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen. It's your weekly dose of footballing nonsense from us here at the CookieCast Podcast Network. And sadly, for the second week in a row, the fantastic foursome is a terrifying trio. If we go with that. Sadly, Mr. Moore, unable to join us once again this week. And even more worrying from a Mr. Moore perspective, no predictions from him from last week. And at time of recording, no predictions for the upcoming week. So, what that means is that for Mr. Cook, his unofficial stat?
No!
He's over? I guess. Because he can't win the week, obviously. So
we've not put our points in yet, Paul. Come on. There is still a chance he could draw.
Let me just pull the curtain back slightly. I may or may not have already gone through the week's results and totted up the scores in the book. So I can pretty much guarantee you now that he hasn't won. In as much as he got zero. But speaking of Mr. Moore, we'll start with his team first from last week in what can only be described as a very controversial Nottingham Forest 0, Liverpool 1. Obviously, I said we'll open up with his team. Given my faux-pas slip of the tongue from last week, I didn't mention which way this was his team. Of course, I was very to the home side. The Trent Enders, as it was. I haven't actually seen the highlights from this game, but this one sounded like it will go on for a while, shall we say, as controversial and some shady goings on. So to put it in perspective, this game was 0-0 going into the 97th minute. During which Nottingham Forest were on the attack, had the ball in their possession in the Liverpool half, almost in the territory of the Liverpool penalty area, to be honest. And the referee blew for a off the ball injury, I presume. I don't know if you saw the incident, Stu, but
So I've seen the whole thing probably about four times because they replayed it and replayed it and replayed it on Sky Sports News as they tend to do every hour on the hour and every 10 minutes in between shortly after it all gone down. It's almost like nothing else happened on Sunday or Saturday where everyone. But the whole thing about it should have been a penalty to start with. Oh, I'm not entirely convinced it was a penalty, but it was definitely more of it was worth a look, shall we say, particularly in this day and age. But it was more a penalty than anything else that happened shortly afterwards. It was the fact that it was just a whole cock-up with the fact that the ball got given back to the wrong the wrong team, effectively, which was a huge issue. And they've tried to sort of play it down ever since then. Oh, you know, there was like a minute between that happening and Liverpool scoring. Well, yeah, there was a minute between it. But the point is, was that Liverpool shouldn't have had the possession. If Forest had been given the ball back as they should have been, that minute wouldn't have been the same minute that we saw in actuality. Like, you know, you'll never know what could have happened otherwise. Yeah, Liverpool could have nicked the ball and still ran off and scored. But simultaneously, Forest were a lot nearer to their attacking end. So who's to say that Forest wouldn't have scored? Like, it's the whole thing when, like, the guy in charge of the rules and laws of the game in that particular setup doesn't really know what he's doing, combined with the fact that he's got, you know, the earpiece in to correct him if need be. This whole thing about, like, they shouldn't be taking advice during it, it's only if it's, like, stopped and whatever. Fuck that. If you've done a bad job and you have the opportunity to put it right there and then, why would you not take it? It's just absolute insanity. Like, it seems to be the hide behind the red tape of it as much as the bad decisions for me. And I can understand why Forrest was so aggrieved. I'm sure Mr. Moore will have plenty more to say, but did you see the whole thing about Marinakis at the end as well?
I haven't. Again, I've not seen it.
The Nottingham Forest owner was pitch side by the time that all of this had unravelled, and there was all sorts of reports coming out saying that he'd had to be held back because he was so angry. But if you watched it, I imagine it was a little bit like the Go Compare Man rocking up at the kebab shop to find out they were actually sponsored by, like, Compare the Market instead. Because he walked up to the edge of the pitch, looked pretty disgruntled, and then walked back to where he was sitting. He just didn't pay any more attention. There was no more anger to it really than that. But yeah, you know, he's just a big angry man, and he's going to come and fight the referee because he's got this sort of bit of a reputation. Nah. The referee made a mistake, and they should have put it right at the time. But then my anger for Forrest and kind of like sympathy with them is that it should, like I say, plenty of opportunity to put it right there and then. My issue with it going forward after that point was that for about half an hour it was the worst thing that had happened that day in the entire history of the world. And then after that half an hour of boil down, it then became this, oh, well, you know, there was a minute between the goal. Like I said, there was a minute between the goal, and they tried to play it down again, and it's like, well, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's one of those ones, isn't it, where you get the one side that says, oh, it's terrible, it should never have happened. We need to sort of... This is the whole point of VAR was supposed to be in, so that this sort of thing wouldn't happen. And then you've got the people that sort of feel like they have to sort of have the other side of the argument, like, oh yeah, well, technically this happened, and then this happened. Yeah, it gets convoluted and it starts to become a bit of a slanging match and so that. From a predictions perspective, obviously Matt didn't get any predictions, so he gets no points. Sadly, joining him in no points is Mr. Andrew Cook, who had put down a 2-1 Forest win, a 1-year Hudson-Odoi and Salah with the goals. But myself and Mr. Womansea do get off the mark after the week, as we both had 3-1 Liverpool wins. We both had a 1-meter score for Forest. Stuart had Diaz, Gakpo and Elliot. I had Diaz, Salah and Nunez to score for Liverpool. So I bagged myself a bonus point for the goal scorer. 2 for myself, 1 for Stu, 0 for Andy and Matt. Our next game saw Preston North End taking on Hull City. I don't want to foreshadow this one, but I'm assuming the breakdown of this one might take about 45 seconds.
I have it in bullet point form this week.
Let's hear it.
We're now unbeaten in 5 games at this point. Both sides did have chances. It was fairly level. 4 shots on target apiece. Hull stay sixth, and that's about it.
So yes, dreary 0-0 draw. You like to see it, unless you predicted goal scorers on the podcast, in which case terrible form. Andy, 1-0 Hull, 0 points. Stu, 1-1 draw, gets the point for the draw. Paul, 2-2 draw, gets the point for the draw. Point for me, point for Stu, 0 for Andy, and of course, 0 for Matt. Our third game, and we go off to the Potteries, where Stoke City were taking on my boys at Middlesbrough, and yet another tale of Middlesbrough season, in which they play an opposition who, on paper, you would imagine they would be able to beat, as Stoke started the day inside the bottom three. I believe they may have ended the day in the bottom three as well, but they did it with all 3 points, sadly, as they managed to best my boys by 2-0. The first of which was scored in the first half. But I did a bit of a double take on this one, because I wasn't entirely sure, but I thought for a second it was an ex-Middlesbrough player that had scored. Turns out that they hadn't just missed a couple of letters out of his name. It wasn't Juninho, it was Bai Yun-ho, an Asian player who plays for Stoke City. The ball had just a bit of a hopeful crossfield ball from the right back sort of area. Luke Ayling tried to judge the flight of it, completely cocked it up. Yun-ho then picked up the ball and carried it to the edge of the box. Ayling had tried to get back in to make the tackle. He was unceremoniously put on his arse by the goal scorer, who then just finished neatly into the bottom left hand corner from the edge of the box to make it 1-0. And then that old trait that we like on the podcast, the old boy rule, definitely came into effect in the second half. On the 71st minute, Stoke made it 2. Lewis Baker had a loan spell at the Borough a couple of seasons ago when he was on loan from Chelsea, or one of his many loan spells away from Chelsea. Stoke had a corner on the right-hand side. They played it along the ground short to the guy who was on the near post. He just laid it back to the edge of the box where Baker was lurking for the shot. Takes a massive deflection off the centre-half, Rav Vandenberg, and completely wrong-footed Seni Dieng to make it 2-0. One of those goals where you just know if Borough had played the same passage of play, that ball would have hit the defender and gone wide. Another one, not quite as much of a deflection as the Matty Cash Aston Villa goal in the FA Cup, which settled the game right at the death. But definitely one of those ones where, when it's not going for you, you kind of know that those ones are going to win someone and go in, rather than go wide. Borough just all out of sorts. They didn't think they were in danger of going down, but didn't think they were in danger of challenging for the playoffs at this point. But this result actually left them 6 points clear of the relegation zone. So, I mean, there's a lot of teams in there, in between them. But two bad results, and they could be right in the thick of it. Predictions-wise, Andy had gone for a 1-0 Borough win. Sadly, no points there. Stu had gone for a 0-0 draw. Bet he wishes he'd put that on his own team. And I'd gone for a 1-1 draw. So no points there for anyone, apart from the fact that I did have Baker to score for Stoke as my kicker. So I get a bonus point for the goal scorer there. Our fourth game of the week took us to Manchester, where Andy's team, Man City, took on Andy's team, Manchester United. Obviously, if you know, you know. And strangely enough, Andy's team, whichever way you want to look at it, started this game the better, as Marcus Rashford rifled in an absolutely unstoppable effort in the first half. I'm just double checking the time. I think it was within the first 10 minutes, from what I can remember. It said, well, 8 minutes in, one of those ones that looks better the more times you play it back, firing off the underside of the bar, keeper absolutely no chance. To give Man United a shot 1-0 lead. They probably should have made it 2 as well, as a little bit later on in the first half, Marcus Rashford was playing through again and had managed to get the wrong side of Kyle Walker, but messed up his header to kind of take the ball completely.
Within the space of the first half, we got old Rashford and current Rashford all within that same time period.
I was texting my other mate who's in Man United fan. It seemed as though, you know those games where you say the worst thing the team did was score, because it kind of like woke up the other team and they rattled them and stuff like that. It was kind of the opposite for Rashford. It was kind of the worst thing he possibly could have done was that goal, because it just, as soon as he scored it, he just went to absolute pieces. He was basically a jigsaw. He just went to pieces in the box. Should have made it 2, balls up his chance, and then let Kyle Walker get back in. They managed to get to half-time 1-0 up. But then the second half started. I believe it was actually Rashford who was through again on the 55th minute when he was tackled by Kyle Walker. Noted Manchester United fan and ex-player Gary Neville on commentary said, "There's not enough in that challenge for me for that to be a foul." So I would take that as that's not a foul, personally, when Mr. Manchester United himself is saying it's not a foul. Man City took the ball, recycled it, made their way up the pitch, and Phil Foden ended up with the ball, cutting in from the right-hand side and unleashing an absolute thunderbolt of his own into the top left-hand corner to make it 1-1. As soon as that happened, you could just tell where the game was going to go. We got to the 80th minute. United felt like they might have held on for a point at this point, but Foden again popped up with his second on the 80th minute to make it 2-1. And then, in case there weren't any Man United fans that were left in the stands in the 91st minute that thought, we might be in with a chance of this, lads, on came super sub Sofyan Amrabat to pick the ball up from a horrendous pass to him from the back. He wasn't on it, but somebody was in Erling Haaland, and he pounced to tuck in right at the death to get his goal after what could only be described as one of the misses of the season earlier on in the first half, where he was all of our 3 yards out. Had a very, very easy header to make it 1-1 and decided to go with it with his feet and blazed it over the bar from up 2 yards out, which is very impressive for a man who was probably the best finisher in the Premier League. So bit of an about face. First time, I believe, since 2015 or possibly 2016 that Manchester United have held the lead at half time and gone on to lose the game. So it doesn't happen that often. So, Manchester City 3-1 winners. Another week where Mr. Cook remains blue in his Manchester heart. I'm sure he didn't want that at all. He also didn't want the 1-1 result that he had predicted. He did, however, predict Haaland and Rashford to score, so bagged himself 2 points. Stuart gone for a 2-0 City win. Goals for Bernardo Silva and Haaland, so back in top 2 points there. I had 3-1 Manchester City, so I get 2 points for the score. I also had Haaland to score 2 and Foden to score. If only I'd swapped those two around, I would be sitting on a lot more points right now. Sadly, I didn't have Rashford, I had Garnacho as my Man United goal scorer. So just the 4 points for me from that game. 3 games to finish off. We're back on Humberside, where Hull City were taking on Birmingham City. This is one of those games where midweek championship fixture, if you have the ability or the option of being a Sky customer, you do have the option to watch these under the red button. I did, or if you're a season ticket holder at the MKM Stadium, you can watch it there. Couldn't you, Stu?
You could. And, yeah, it was frustrating, shall we say. Same old story. Dominated the game at home. Can't kill the team off. Yeah, they'd started to create a few chances. Rossini has resorted to starting the last few games. Granted, we're undefeated, so you know there is that in five up to this point. But he's starting games without a striker, so there's this sort of option where they pass. They get to the point where they're in, you know, decent shooting range, edge of the box, inside the box, whatever. What do we do? Play another pass. And it's like, or attempt another pass. It's like, just fucking shoot, man. Like, it's really frustrating to watch. It can be great when they actually get the last bit right. And don't get me wrong, they're playing actual football these days. It's not just like this, you know, hoof it and chase after it like a bunch of school kids sort of business. You can tell that they're organised. You can tell it's the way that he wants to play. Started off the season saying it, coming to the last 10 games of the season now and still saying it. So he's definitely instilled it into him. But we've got Billy Sharp on the books. We've got Ohio that was fit. Connolly's due back this week, Paul's favourite. Like, there are players that we've got in the building that have supposedly put the ball away for a living, but yet none of them are getting a start at the moment. And I understand that we've got, Cavallo and Zorori and Tyler Morton and Tufan and all the other midfielders that we've got, but I understand they've got an attacking mentality to it, but just if it's not producing that much output, 0-0 at Preston for a start, just maybe give them a go for longer than 10 minutes, maybe. Just maybe.
Is there this idea, though, that if he's... is he playing like a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1 or... What is it? What does it look like on paper? Like a 5-3-2 or?
So we've been setting up with four at the back. So generally speaking, it's ex Borough boy Giles, Greaves, and Jones in the middle, and then Louis Coyle at right back. Standard back four, and then when Seri played, Seri kind of does his usual sort of go in between midfield and defence, almost as like a defensive, just a straight up defensive midfielder. So it's like 4-1.
4-1?
And then a 5. So they just sit. And nobody really ventures that much further forward.
Yeah, my question was basically like, is the idea that he's got like a fluid front, well, as it turned out, 5, I suppose, where they don't necessarily not have a position. Obviously, they're told like where they need to sort of like put themselves on the pitch, but it's kind of fluid in that, like, if Carvalho drifts out to the right, Tufan will take the position up top, or, you know, Philogene might drop in a little bit and Zorori will go out to the left or something like that. Anyone who's playing in the sort of the front four or five position generally knows where they need to sort of, they need to keep themselves, like, you know, high of the centre circle.
Tufan and Carvalho definitely play a little bit further forward, or more forward than the others, for sure. But the only sort of fluidity about it, really, is that occasionally, when they're both on the pitch, because interestingly, Zorori didn't start on in the Birmingham game, him and Philogene swap from left to right, and vice versa. Like, I'm starting to feel like, and it's still only early doors, so maybe this is a bit too heavy-handed to begin with, but I don't feel like those two, even though they play on opposite flanks, play particularly well together, because I think that they both have the same favourite side. So when you know, they're on their less favoured side, that particular player just goes to shit until they swap back for 10 minutes and they have a really solid 10 minutes again, and then it's time to swap again. And it's like, I'm not sure about that. I guess that's a kind of a work in progress. But regardless of my issues with the team and the way that it's set up currently, again, must know what he's doing, because they are undefeated to this point in the last sort of five games. But it started to look a little better on 25 minutes when Toufan scored, possibly with his arm, possibly would have been a Jacob Greaves goal anyway had he not sort of got a touch on it. Ball came in from the left hand side from a corner, flicked on by Greaves, and yeah, then it just sort of glanced past the arm of Toufan seemingly and went into the net. Now, this was at the complete opposite end of the stadium to where I was sat, but it was very helpful that the stadium team decided to replay this thing on the huge scoreboards, video screens, so everybody, including the Birmingham fans, could see what had happened. When it did happen on the pitch, the Birmingham players were so mad about the fact that the goal was given that their left winger, number 19, got booked for his protesting. And turns out, might have had a point, maybe, but still. I think Sky billed it as controversial, but wouldn't really elaborate much further than that at the time. So it was 1-0 to Toufan. I will take a little bit. Take a little bit of luck when we get it, because it doesn't often happen our way. Not really much happening from a Birmingham perspective until their sort of standing manager, seeing as Tony Mowbray's still poorly at the moment, decided to make what was the first time I've seen in person four substitutes at the same time, effectively swapping out like a third of the team. It seemed to work. They started to do a little better. And the fifth substitute, though, was the killer, because they brought on Jukovic, who always scores against Hull. And just to make an extra bit of salt in that wound, it was an exact carbon copy of the goal that he scored against us at the same ground in the FA Cup earlier this season. So lessons clearly not being learnt there by the Hull City backline. Ball swung in, bullet header from the middle of the box. Ended again at the opposite end of the ground, so I didn't even really get to see a goal up close this particular week. So yeah, final score, Hull 1, Birmingham 1, just about clinging on to sixth spot, but that relied on the next game on the podcast, which I'm sure we'll get to momentarily.
Yes, not to jump ahead slightly, but we will come to that next. So, predictions wise, myself and Mr. Cook had both gone 1-0 Hull win. Philogene and Sharp to score, so sadly no points. I had also gone for a win, but I got 2-0. I had Omer and Toufan. So I managed to jammy myself a little point there. Yeah, uncharacteristic from Hull, but We'll come to it when we come to the predictions for next week. So as we said, the next game to discuss is Middlesbrough versus Norwich City. But before we get into Middlesbrough versus Norwich, we're actually going to step away momentarily just to recharge my bottle of iced tea lemon flavour. Oh, you won't need to go anywhere though, as it'll put you back up your feet. But we're going to take a couple of moments, so be right back.
Recording in progress.
Just like that, we're back at it, and we're coming back to you with Middlesbrough versus Norwich City. As Stuart said, Hull's position in the top six was very much dependent on Middlesbrough not letting Norwich win. And they didn't start very well, as within 20 minutes, let's just double check the time. 17 minutes in, a hopeful punt up the pitch from Norwich found its way to Ashley Barnes, not unmarked, but certainly not under much pressure in the middle of the box. He controlled the ball and continued to fall over. What a clumsy bastard. What a silly... Oh, he's managed to somehow correct his feet and push the ball past the goalkeeper. How has that happened then? Yes, that's correct, ladies and gentlemen. Middlesbrough conceded a goal where a player had enough time to fall over, correct his posture, and play the ball on the ground past the goalkeeper. Big thumbs up.
Lots and lots of swears in this house at that exact moment in time.
Just absolutely ridiculous. Middlesbrough just could not get to grips without Norwich playing. Norwich were by far the better team. Just passing and moving, pulling the Borough players out of position, working little triangles around them. Very, very comfortable. All that changed, however, on the 30th minute when Norwich were trying to play the ball through, and the ball broke to in between Borja Sainz and Johnny Howson. Johnny Howson slid in with what looked at the time to be potentially a bit of a dangerous challenge from Howson. It looked as if he'd left his foot a little bit on the Norwich player from the stills that were taken of the challenge. Obviously, you can't tell everything you need to tell from still footage, and that doesn't tell the whole story. Was about that. But in the aftermath of said challenge, Mr. Sainz decided, under the very careful and watchful eye of the referee, that it would be a great idea to kick Johnny Howson in the thigh as the referee was watching. To which, obviously, Johnny Howson, being the seasoned professional that he is, made sure that the referee saw that he'd been kicked in the thigh by obviously pulling up his shorts and being like, my leg! I'm from Leeds, don't you know? I'm Morley. From Morley. Look at my leg! Look at my leg! Look what he's done! And obviously the ref sees that and's like, you're absolutely right, Johnny. Let's have no more of that. Red card, off you are, sir. So Norwich down to 10 men after 30 minutes. And for once, Middlesbrough capitalised on a situation that was provided to them. Oh my good lord! Heavens above, there is a god. 37 minutes in, Marcus Fors with the equaliser. A little 1-2 by Lucas Engel and Lewis O'Brien down the left-hand side. Played Engel into the box. Carried the ball, squared it in. It was blocked by the Norwich players, but just rolled into the path of Marcus Fors, who smashed over about 6 yards out. I'm pretty sure that on the commentary they said that's his first goal in a game that he started this season. I'm almost certain that can't be the case, because at one point he was pretty much the starting striker. Wasn't he? So I'll double check it and come back to you next week. But if it is, then start him more, please, Michael, is all I'll say. 1-1 suddenly became 2-1 before half-time in the 43rd minute when Emmanuel Latte-Lath came back from his latest injury against... Stoke at the weekend. The ball was played into the box from the left-hand side by Matt Clark, just clipped a little ball into the box. The Norwich defenders completely missed it. Fell to Latte-Lath around about the penalty spot. He managed to control it, get out of his feet, and just slide to the left of the keeper from, again, about 6 to 8 yards out. That was it until half time. And Borough killed the game in the second half on the 62nd minute with the goal of the game. A lovely floated ball over the top by Luke Ayling, where he spotted the run of Lucas Engel off the left hand side. He timed the run to perfection, arrived on the ball, and just volleyed past the goalkeeper first time. Gave the keeper no chance. A lovely little first-time volleyed finish to make it 3-1 to the Borough and have people happy in both Teesside and Humberside, shall we say. Predictions-wise, myself and Mr. Womansey had gone for 1-1 draws. I'd gone for Housen and Fastnacht to score for Norwich and Borough respectively. So sadly, that is my first game of the week where I get 0 points. So you had McGree and Sarah to score. So again, no points for Mr. Wimbersey. Andy, though, it's his first correct result of the week. He'd gone for a 2-0 Borough win. Goals for Silvera and Fours, getting him a bonus point. So 2 points for Mr. Cook there. Our final game of the week was our first European-flavoured game of the season. Andy's adopted team of Manchester City took on FC Copenhagen 3-1 up from the first leg. Now, to say this one was done as a contest within the first 8 minutes, probably a bit of an understatement. City started the game very strong. After 5 minutes, they went front on the night, making it 4-1 on aggregate when Manuel Akanji, centre-half, with a striker's finish, buried the ball in the top corner. I believe it was from a corner. The second goal was scored by Julian Alvarez on the 9th minute, and one of those ones where if you're the goalkeeper, you kind of want to have a little bit of a look at yourself. Speculation, he must have suffered a fractured cheekbone or something similar. He must have a facial. He was playing with a protective mask on his face, and the joke in the panel was that has his mask slipped over his eyes so he can't see, as how has he not caught that ball? So always good. Copenhagen tried to make a game of it. They got one back on the 29th minute with a really nice pass and move goal scored by ex-Southampton player and Celtic, Mohamed El Yunusi. Played a little bit of 1-2 on the edge of the box, got it back, bent the ball around Edison to make it 2-1 on the night and 5-2 on aggregate. But City put the game to bed in the third minute of stoppage time at the end of the half, where Erling Haaland got his customary finish for the evening to make it 3-1 on the night, 6-2 on aggregate. Happy days, City safely in for the last 8 of the Champions League. You'll be surprised to hear that we had all gone for Manchester City wins. Andy had gone 1-0, Alvarez to score, 2 points there. Stewart had gone 2-0 with De Bruyne and Foden, neither even played in the game, so he was never going to get any points there. I had gone for a 4-0 win with a Haaland hat-trick and one for Julian Alvarez, so I get 3 points for that game, which means for the week, sadly, 0 points. Mr. Matthew Moore, what was he thinking with all those predictions? Bless him about that. With 5 points from 7 games, it is Stuart Woodmansey. Welcome to you, sir. He left it late, but he did get points in the fourth game of the week, and then managed to get another couple of points in some of the other games. But with 6 points in 7 games, well done to Mr. Andrew Cook, but taking the win this week, a whopping 12 points in 7 games, it is Mr. Paul Williams. Big pat on the back for Big Paulie there. Well done, son. We move swiftly on to week 32's games, and we start with the weekend's games, the first of which sees Hull City taking on league leaders Leicester City. Yes, Stu?
Not that we desperately now need something from this game, but this is also Hull's last game for nearly 3 weeks.
Interesting. International break is incoming.
We're scheduled to play Coventry, because they got through in the FA Cup. I think that's scuppered a game as well.
I was going to say, is it a case of international break and FA Cup next week? That might be the case. I assume you'll be going?
Correct. We'll be in attendance. Yeah, full squad.
Family day out. You'll love to see it. Obviously, it's Mr. Woodmansey's team, so he will give his prediction last. As we said at the start of the podcast, sadly no predictions as of yet from Mr. Moore. If he does send them to me before the kickoff of the games on Saturday, I will add them to the book and he will get the points accordingly. I'm going to change it up this week. Even though my result is written in the book, I'm going to come to Mr. Cook first. He's offering for Hull City versus Leicester City.
Put a lot of time and effort into my predictions from this week. I feel that offers up two opportunities. One, Paul Williams is going to be like, Two, there's going to be a lot of... He doesn't play for that team anymore and hasn't done for 9 years. Obviously, the position of Leicester, Hull, I mean, let's face it, they are on a roll. As Stu said, could do to get a little bit of something for a little break. So I've just gone with a simple 1-0 Hull win with Phil OG getting a goal.
1-0 with the unusually off the pace on Tuesday night, Jaden Philogene, I felt pretty wasteful with some chances that he had in the box. Snatching at a couple of his opportunities, pulling their methods wide. Another undefeated in
six now.
I don't think it's going to be 7, unfortunately. Leicester have had their wobble, but they did get a win midweek to get back on track. And I think they probably will just have too much. Although I did say this about the Leicester Borough game, and Borough ended up winning. So let's hope it's the kiss of death once again for Leicester City. I have gone 2-0 to Leicester, and I've gone for Mavadidi and Akgun. I'm assuming, if I have assumed this incorrectly or erroneously, I have presumed that he may be Turkish. So therefore, I'm just thinking he'll feel right at home at the MKM Stadium, so he'll probably help himself to a goal.
See, where you've gone wrong there, Paul, is what you mean is we'll be signing him in September.
If it turns out he's only on loan at Leicester, obviously, Mr. Charlie, I think that's his name, obviously, yep. reinsert correct chairman's name there. I imagine he will be on the phone immediately. Do you kind of like England? Do you want to come to the Humberside Riviera? How do you see it going with the boys?
So just to sort of continue that little bit that you said there, Paul, that's effectively how we ended up signing Omer, on the basis of he played against us in a friendly whilst they were playing I think it was when they went to Turkey last year, and liked what we saw and then ended up signing him in January. And do you know what? He's quite good. He's probably the best of the Turkish contingent that have arrived. Obviously, he's got a chance to develop yet, but I'd say he's better than Tufan for me so far from what we've seen. Back to the matter at hand. I agree with you, Paul. I can't see that our unbeaten run is going to continue. We did beat them 1-0 at their place earlier this season. But unfortunately, I have them down to return that favour. So I've got Hull 0, Leicester 1, with Mr. Winks to score the goal.
Ooh, he caught himself, people.
That's what she said.
Obviously, like we said, if Mr. Moore does get his prediction into us prior to kickoff on Saturday, we will add them to Slate. The second game from Saturday sees Queen's Park Rangers taking on my lot, Middlesbrough. Obviously, my team. I'll have to go last. So let's continue with Mr. Woodman for his thoughts on QPR versus the Berg. What do you reckon to this one?
I actually watched a bit of the QPR West Brom game, and QPR, they look like they're scrapping a little bit, to be honest. They're a lot better side than I would have given them credit for, and having seen what I saw yesterday from both sides in the end, I have gone for a 1-1 draw. With I'm going to keep sticking at it until he finally bags one. So I'm going to go for McGree for Borough.
Mm-hmm.
And the only person I ever pick when QPR come up on the board. And that would be Dykes.
Yes. I saw a clip on socials, I believe it was on Insta, of what appeared to be an absolutely fantastic save from the West Brom goalkeeper. It was only on the second showing of said clip that it was at. It was a wonderful save from the centre-half, who absolutely got away with a handball on the line to stop QPR from getting a third goal. I don't know what score it was at the time, but, oh my God, if there was VAR in the Championship, it would have been a goner. Let's just put it that way. Andy, what have you got down for QPR Borough?
I once saw QPR get absolutely smashed live, and it was either 5-0 or 5-1. I've never been able to get away from that as far as QPR are concerned. As we've seen, Borough need to be getting their eye in. So I've gone with a 2-0 Borough win. No surprises, really. I've gone with Flores again, but seeing as he's back and getting goals, Latte laugh. It's been a little while since I've been able to say that, so fire that one off.
As I said to these good lads yesterday, caffeine back on the menu at the Borough. You love to see it. I agree with Stu. I have saw a little bit of spunk in Queen's Park Rangers in their game against West Brom. To say that West Brom are challenging in the top six and seem to be a pretty permanent picture in the playoff race. Arguably, at times, QPR look like the best side, as I said. So, yeah, I've gone for a 2-2 draw on this one. With a Field and Willock to score for QPR, Fours and Greenwood for the Borough.
Personally, on the back of the West Broms thing, I don't see that, like, particularly us or West Brom are going to... You know, there's always that one team that hits form right at the playoffs. That's not us at the moment. If we're drawing games and it in West Brom either, the disappointing thing is, yeah, we're unbeaten in six, but if the last three games, they could have notched a winner in those last three games, we'd now be 8 points clear of seventh. And it's only two, and it's just gutting.
So this is always my argument. If you say like when you have like unbeaten runs, take the six in the count for this particular sort of example. So obviously Hull have 1-3, drawn 3. So you'd much rather have lost one and won the other two in that sort of regard. Like I was saying, I think there was something where I think it was Borough had gone on an unbeaten run of 10 games, but in that run there was like 9 draws and there was about 6 nil-nils. Or something like that, and it was like, oh yeah, they're on this really good unbeaten run. I was like, no. For starters, when they can't fucking score, that's not a good run, is it?
Was it Preston last season or the season before, where they lost?
I think it was the start of last season.
They got tanked, didn't they? I think in the first game, and then after that, it was like, oh, they went on this huge unbeaten run. Yeah, but I think in that huge unbeaten run, they maybe won like 2 games.
Well, that was you, wasn't it? You beat them.
Yeah, 3-1, I think, away on the first day. Was
there not a first game this season where you beat 4-0?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was that case in point. The fact that I think there was like a 6-game span at home where they had nil-nils on back-to-back games. And the fans were just like, seriously, we're having to pay for this shit. Anyway, we'll move on, otherwise I'm going to start tearing my own team to fucking ribbons. Our next game moves to Sunday, where we see Mr. Moore's team of Nottingham Forest travel down to Brighton, who are coming off the back of quite the pasting at the hands of the Jose Mourinho-less Roma in the Europa League. They have been beaten 4-0. That is going to be some deficit to overturn. So Brighton versus Forest on Sunday. I went 2-2 in the Borough game. I've gone 2-2 in this one as well. I've gone for Enciso and Welbeck to score off of Brighton. Owoni and Dominguez for Forest. The look on Mr. Cook's face makes me think we should go there right now, because I've obviously said a name that he was questioning in his own head, and the fact that I've said it, I've said both for the name. Go on, Mr. Cook, talk us through your thinking.
So I was like, very similar. I was like, Forest could just, you know, do with notching a goal, but Brighton might get a goal as well. So I've gone with a 1-1 draw. I'm at this point in time, I'm probably never going to pick a Forest game where I don't pick a 1-1 to score. But I also went with Welbeck. And I was like, yeah, I think that's, you know, inspired choice. Which was then confirmed, firmly confirmed by the guru.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here, big man. I got your back. Go on, Stu, what have you got for Brighton versus Forest?
I've also got a 1-1 draw. Draws across the board. Although I went for Ferguson and Elanga.
Very nice. Next up, Mr. Cook's team again. Goes Manchester City boys, and it's the big one. Obviously, you would have thought that the big one was last week against Manchester United. Yes, number six. No, not so much from a title perspective, and much bigger when it comes to the actual title shake-up. Liverpool versus Manchester City. Ooh. It will be a popular one on what is, in the UK at least, Mothering Sunday. Dare I suggest there will be some mothers that might be cursing the advocation of television for those 2 to 3 hours. This coming Sunday, obviously it's Mr. Cook's team. He will give us his prediction last. I've gone for a 2-1 Manchester City win of Salah to score for Liverpool. And then a goal apiece for Foden and Bernardo Silva from Manchester City. What have you got for this one, Stu?
I have also got a Manchester City win. I'm really hoping, actually, that they do, because it'll just bring Liverpool down a little peg. Just in the tighten everything back up just that little bit as well. But I've got Haaland to score the goal. Big man for the big occasion, I think.
Just a 1-0.
Just a 1-0.
Or 0-1.
Yeah. Well, Liverpool have spaffed all their goals allowance for the week in where were they playing today? In Europe?
Prague. Slavia Prague, they were playing today.
Yeah, they're not allowed anymore now this week. That's the rules, because that's what I said. So.
We don't make the rules, kids. We simply enforce them harshly against Liverpool. Andy, what do you see for your boys?
As we know, I am not the biggest fan of teams that start with the letter L. And because of that, they will not be getting a goal in this game. They will get 0 goals. Man City, on the other hand, will take away 2 fine goals, sending another of the L teams firmly to the bin. Just Haaland and Alvarez, one apiece. Yeah. And then hopefully we can stop talking about L-shaped teams.
What's your issue with Leighton Orient?
I'm just not a fan. They remind me of trains. I don't know why.
they once employed Harry Kane. I know Mr. Kane is a touchy subject for some people on this podcast. So, one game left, and it is the rearranged fixture that should have taken place on FA Cup fourth round weekend, which is Birmingham City take on Middlesbrough. Now, as Stu said when he was covering the whole Birmingham game earlier on, this should really be a reunion of an ex-Middlesbrough boss going up against the Borough for this time. But unfortunately, as was said earlier, Tony Mowbray has had to take a leave of absence from his role as Birmingham City manager to recover from an illness or some surgery, I believe, that he's having. So, obviously, best wishes to Mogger, a bona fide Borough legend without a shadow of a doubt. Never really got the backing that he deserved as the manager. He'd come in when it was when Borough were not for the first time on the bones of their arse, steadied the ship, almost got him in the playoffs, and then was binned off a bit unceremoniously when the going got a little bit tough. And because of that, I think his Birmingham charges might try and sort of pull out all the stops to get him a win in his prone state. I've gone for a Birmingham City. Oh no, I'm supposed to be giving my prediction last. What am I doing?
Oh, you've done it now. You've done it now. Just carry on.
Oh no!
Just carry on.
I've already said it now, though.
He's jinxed it.
2-1 Birmingham City win. I'm so sorry. I'll pen my resignation letter and have it on Andy's desk first thing in 2029 or something like that. But you know, we'll make do. 2-1 Birmingham City win for me. I've gone for old boy rule on both sides of the coin. I've gone for Jukovic to score for Birmingham. I've also gone for Stansfield. That's not the old boy rule. But I've got McGree to score for Borough. I did have a spell on loan at Birmingham a couple of seasons ago. Stu, what have you got down for Birmingham versus De Borough?
Having been the side that Hull have played the most now this season, twice in the FA Cup and twice in the league, as we should have the other night, Borough should be beating these. So I'm hopeful that the antics of the Norwich game will spur them on to a 1-0 victory. I've gone for Greenwood for the goal on that front.
Andy, absolutely not happy with that. He's just... go on, Mr. Cook. Finishes off.
I just feel like I worked especially hard this week. I wanted to be like, you know, the guy in the know. I've got Borough winning 2-0. No surprises to see Falls' name there. I feel after an earlier stat this evening that me predicting Falls week in, week out is probably not the most inspired choice. Apparently Stu was there when I was writing Greenwood down and was like, this guy knows. So
looking through the window behind you, Andy.
I was like, nobody's expecting me to go midfield.
You're absolutely right there. That brings us to the end of the predictions. I believe, Mr. Womanson, you may have some odds for us for the week.
I do. I can also, whilst the odds are currently loading, give you the bad statistic in the respect of I didn't get selected to go on a holiday to Turkey with the football team.
Boo!
I did, however,
get your tombola machine shook up, lad.
I did, however, get a lovely email saying, we're really sorry, and it was actually done very professionally. So, the odds. So, the odds on all of our teams to absolutely shit the bed this weekend, unfortunately, are the lowest. So, the odds on Leicester, QPR and Brighton all to win comes in at 7.5 to 1.
Oh, God.
Yep. The odds on all three teams to win, so for Hull, Borough and Forest to win, come in at 40 to 1. Now, I assume this week that's probably because of Hull-Leicester.
QPR, there are two away
there. I suppose, but also QPR Middlesbrough is probably a bit of a toss-up in some respects, so like maybe a draw might be the one. But anyway, if all three teams pull a point, that will net you 45 to 1. So it's not actually, draws and wins aren't too dissimilar in the betting world this week. So who indeed knows? Clearly, I have used my odds boost, as it were, to boost the draw result. So if they all do draw, that will actually net me 50-1. So we will keep you posted should a winner drop in. But those are the odds for this week.
Very, very nice. We will hit one week where all of our teams win. But we had one a couple of Saturdays ago. In fact, it was the Leicester Middlesbrough game. Where no one in their right mind was back in a Middlesbrough win. So that'll be why we never won one. Yes, one will come in on a week where we have bet on our teams to get the wins. Will it be this week? Fingers crossed. I'm not holding out much hope. As per usual, thank you to these two gentlemen here for joining me to take you through the deals, ins and outs of their teams. Thank you, obviously, to you guys, the listeners, the watchers, for tuning in once again. Come back in a week's time where we'll break it all down and do it all again for you. We'll give you the ups and downs, the goal scorers, the silly, probably, I don't know. So we had a guy who slipped over this week and scored against the Borough, so that means one of the QPR goals was going off someone's left bollock or something like that. So tune in next week to find out which body parts scored against the Borough this week. But until then, thanks for listening as always. We'll be back in a week's time. Until then, take care of yourselves, look after each other. See you in a week.
So there you go, what do you think to that? I think we can still do it without Matt. Some might say we don't need Matt anymore. We don't need him. We can do it without him. We're not missing him. Before you go, please do consider like, share, subscribe and comment. Leave a review where you can leave a review. And check out the website, thecookiecast.com. There we've got social media links and an email button, and that way you can get in touch with us. That is it for this one. Till next time, I'm going to say bye, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to these grumpy old men talk about football. If you've enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.